Welcome back to the Ink Sink. I am Annie.
I'm Kaylee.
This is the publishing podcast for the rest of us. Kaylee, we have a sponsor today.
We sure do, Annie. Who's that sponsor?
His name is Kevin. It's our friend Kev. It's just Kevin. Our dear friend Kevin.
And our ongoing sponsors,
and,
of course.
And our ongoing sponsor, yeah, a dollar goes really far. He walked up to me at brunch and he handed me a crisp $1 bill. I'm showing it to Kaylee. She can see it's real.
And you heard the crispness.
And he said, I want you to tell your listeners that your podcast is brought to them by books.
Read them.
Read them. And I was like, okay, Kevin.
Thank you. Check and check.
I appreciate Thanks, Kevin. Thank you very much. And if you would like to sponsor us, you sure can. We accept denominations only in paper money, though. So you're going to have to figure that out. We accept Monopoly money.
No.
We don't accept Scrabble tiles.
We should, though. That feels like that would be on point for us, actually.
We should, actually. Yes, give us a Scrabble tile. We'll advertise
for anything. I have a very new fancy Scrabble that we got for one of our wedding presents, actually. Like a fancy, like, spinny board that I'm really excited to get set up. And we also, so we got, like.
I love Scrabble. You know me.
I do. It's a really nice set. And I was like, this is going to be great to do, like, just small group game nights or something.
Yeah.
But, like, I got two games. I put two games on our, I was like, everything else is going to be serious adult stuff. It was a Scrabble and Jumanji.
Jumanji. You put Jumanji on your wedding registry. Got us
Jumanji.
Fantastic.
So we have to also play that.
I'm not playing Jumanji. Are you serious? Yeah. Robin Williams taught me well.
If we have to go into. the jungle. I don't want to go in there with anyone else. It's you and me. We're gonna Thelma and Louise. We gotta go in.
We are ride and die. That's right. So Huey. We don't have a choice. But yes, I would absolutely love to jump into the wilderness with you, Kaylee. But I'm gonna go ahead and say we have to pack first. I'm not going without my Kindle, and I don't want to go without one of the Monster energy drinks.
For sure.
Like, it's gonna be rough, and I'm gonna need some of that, like, chemically caffeine. We'll have to bring instant coffee. I know you don't like it, but we have to.
No, I. You know what?
If what else is on our Jumanji adventure list? We have to have a Bluetooth speaker.
We're going to need a solar or recharger, or a contactless recharger.
We'll have to get this one of those solar power packs.
We got this.
I feel like we're a water bottle, just one.
What we need to bring is the water filter, like the straws.
We'll bring our Brita pitcher and. That'll take up the most space, so we have to be really careful.
I've read the packing, like, efficiencies. You take the top off and you pack your socks inside the empty space, and then you take them out later.
Yeah. We're just gonna be drinking socky water in the Jumanji jungle.
You know what? I'm not
proud. Nothing could go wrong.
I'm not proud, Annie. I feel like eventually in Jumanji we will know we'll have fewer standards probably.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's true. The sake water. Remember when we had sake water?
I'm really selling this, aren't I? Good. I hope so.
All right, I'll play Jumanji, but only with you, Kaylee. Anyone else who asks me is a no-no.
Awesome. Well, good, because don't go into the jungle wilderness of magic jungle land without me, Annie. I'll be jealous.
I would never.
Good. Such a specific.
Thank God. Kaylee, we have had some feedback on our poetry episode. I think this is not the most feedback we've ever gotten on an episode, but a lot of feedback. People reached out and called me and said that they agreed with us most of the time, most of what we said, that, like, it's annoying when things are in an ivory tower and try to put on airs, but otherwise you had very good feedback on your poem.
Oh, nice.
Everybody loved what you put in there.
Because it's not the stupid, like, academic, untouched, like, pristine, whatever. It's people that are actually just normal people in the world. Like, that's the most interesting stuff. Like I said, like, some of my favorite books are just, like, a soldier came back from his tour in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And the most powerful poetry, in my opinion, throughout, you know, history. And even, like, some of our, like, classic poems today were really considered subversive and modern at the time because they were written by just people responding to stuff that was happening in their lives.
I mean, there's a reason that a lot of the classic poetry or the, like, well-known poetry from the past is from war times, is because people were responding and effusing that feeling. And I think that's obviously very important. Also, they wanted to, one person had a recommendation for you, specifically Kaylee. I deal with all the feedback, so Kaylee is hearing this for the first time.
I love the fact, I do appreciate that you filter this for me. I don't know, I'm happy to do this in some fashion. If this is if this is giving me access to the account, that's then right. Let's do that. Yes. But like, thank you so much. You can also direct all feedback to Kaylee to Annie's Facebook, please.
That's right. Also, Annie's email, Annie's Twitter, Annie's TikTok. Oh, we have a Pinterest page, which again is me. If any, our YouTube.
I'm going to start making memes, but I'm going to send them to you to post.
Good. No, please do.
I actually made some notes through this article. I was like, this line specifically has, there's one of the stories. Yes. I have a meme.
Did
I
you download Mematic and be like, yes?
I haven't made it yet. I just made notes on specifically good. The meme I want to recreate.
Well, now you've promised it, so we have to do it.
I'm going
to
hold me accountable. So what's the feedback I'm
getting? Have you ever read Ogden Nash? Do you like Ogden Nash?
I have read some Ogden Nash before, and I do like Ogden Nash.
Oh, good.
And I will absolutely, I haven't read it, I'll be honest, I haven't read Ogden Nash since like college.
Okay.
So I will totally have to reread. Okay, that's good. That's a great recommendation. I hadn't thought about.
It was presented to me as, I have failed you as a human being for not giving you Ogden Nash. And I was like, thanks, Mom. It was my mom. She wanted you to make sure, to want to make sure that Kaylee read Ogden.
Of course. No, that's wonderful. That's such a, I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Mrs. Annie's mom.
Also, a dummy fact check on my part. I don't know if I put this in the notes.
You did. Is it the first Sumerian versus?
Yes. I said Gilgamesh was written in Sumerian. It was not. And I looked up some things now, so I'm going to give you the actual truth. Gilgamesh was written in Akkadian, not Sumerian. Akkadian is a Semite language, which was developed near Sumeria, but is distinct from the Sumerian languages and their language family. Thank you. We're about to get into some controversy, but first, let's lay some groundwork. What did we receive in the mail, Kaylee?
We got that advanced reader copy. Yeah, we did. From
Chuck Tingle!
We're Tinglers!
We're Tinglers!
And Chuck Tingle has somehow now encountered in some context that this podcast exists. So if we ever...
or at least the Nightfire team has, which is as good.
Yeah. I'm going to say, if we ever do a trivia night, like our podcast, Chuck Tingle Knows Our Podcast Exists, has to be like our team name.
Oh my God. Yes. Well, now we have to do trivia together.
I know, Wednesdays, I'm open to it. Wednesdays.
You're open Wednesdays now? Okay. Listen, everyone.
We should have done it this Wednesday. Shit.
You should have. Anyway. So we got our first advanced reader copy of Chuck Tingle's forthcoming very first traditionally published novel. We've talked about Chuck Tingle on the show before. Kaylee, you introduced me to Chuck Tingle.
I did. Now we're buckaroos.
And now we're buckaroos. So Chuck Tingle kind of went viral, I guess, a couple years ago. After some trolls, genuinely, I think we can easily call them trolls and white supremacists, decided that American sci-fi and fantasy was too black. Too woke. And that they were going to, as a troll to the Hugo Awards.
Hugo Awards. Mm-hmm.
To nominate Chuck Tingle, who writes satirical erotica.
Very timely satirical erotica. Like, yeah. Chuck, this author just is an absolute champ at, like, responding so quickly to, like, current events.
Yeah.
And, like, pointing out how absolutely stupid, like, a lot of it is. It's fantastic.
And I'll link to where we've talked about Chuck Tingle before on the show, in the show notes, because we absolutely love him.
I
believe the persona genders. Is male. And all the promotional material
that's
did
true.
Say
that's
he.
Correct.
So I, if Chuck Tingle does not identify as a man, or the persona does not want to identify as a man, as a heads up, all your promotional material says he. So maybe we should chat with your Nightfire team.
Maybe.
Either way, so Tor, for those of you who don't know, is a publishing company that is very famous for doing sci-fi and fantasy. Tor Nightfire is their YA imprint. And so we received this book. And I will give my quick review before we jump all the way in, because one of the kind of trade-offs of being in book media is that you get ARCs, and we're going to kind of get more into that in response for an honest review. And you know this about me, Kaylee. I'm not always into YA, and I'm also not always into horror novels, which both this book is.
Both
of those things. Mm-hmm. And I will say I devoured this book. I actually genuinely loved it. I could see it like maybe one or two sequences added as a full CW show. And that's actually a very high compliment from me because I grew up on the CW shows.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, like Riverdale got nothing on Rose Darling. Like, so the protagonist's name is Rose Darling. And I'm going to walk you through the first couple chapters. So this is like even my least favorite type of horror because it's the type where something insane and gross and horrifying is happening and no one is acknowledging it. It's terrifying to me. Just that isolation. So this woman, she's a woman. She's 20. Her name is Rose Darling. And she is experiencing what she thinks are hallucinations, or she's seeing this demon that just walks around and follows her everywhere. And then at the end of the first chapter, she's sitting at dinner with her parents and vomits up thousands of mayflies. And her parents don't react. They're like, well, do you want another plate of spaghetti? And she's like, what? Guys! Flies! And they're like, yeah, we should... You grab a trash bag. I'll get the spaghetti. And I was like, oh my god, like this is the worst horror
awful.
For me. And then there are more incidents throughout the weeks. And the cast of characters is absolutely wonderful. Though Rose is alone for, I would say, the first half of the book. And you get the impression that Chuck Tingle is writing from experience. I know that Tingle, or at least in the author bio at the back of the book, it says that Tingle grew up in Utah. I don't know if the author was a Mormon, but I got the impression that it was written a lot from that kind of like lived experience, because this is something that people don't go into this a lot in like cultish media, but like you don't wake up thinking about how you're in a cult. You don't eat breakfast thinking about culty stuff. You just wake up from your bed with your family and go eat breakfast with your family and go swimming with your family. You know, it's just like your normal, it's a normal life.
Well, yes, 100%. Because like you're not, to be fair, that is my argument for any religion, but cults do 100%. Like you can objectively identify a cult by certain definitions because they take it consistently too far. Mm-hmm. So I super agree with you.
Yeah. So it was really, really good. I literally stayed up one night way past when I needed to go to sleep to finish and make sure that Rose had a happy ending. Because I cared about her so much. But like she immediately endeared herself to me. So the crux of the plot is that in Rose's hometown, which is a cult, there is a conversion camp, a gay conversion camp, and it has a quote 100% success rate. Unquote. How is that possible? Read the book and find out.
Dun dun dun. I do want to know if I'm allowed to then now borrow this copy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's ours. So yeah. It also came with an insert that talked about the harm that conversion camps do to young people, and I'll give that to you as well. It was very, very poignant and very sweet, and I appreciated that. I don't know if Chuck Tingle went through a conversion camp or someone that they knew did, but it was very, very pointed. So 10 out of 10, honestly. I rated it on Goodreads. You can go see it there. But again, not a YA fan usually, not a horror fan usually, but this one really got me. So
mm-hmm. It's so good, by the way. Like, I love your summary of it. I'm really excited to read it.
I liked it a lot. We talked about it a little bit when the deal was made with Tor Nightfire, mm-hmm, because it was all on Twitter, so it was all public, and we talked about it a little bit. I don't remember. We did record an episode about self-publishing in general, and that had a lot of Chuck Tingle stuff in it, but I think we had also had like a big segment on him elsewhere, so I'll have to double check.
I think we have like a drinking game now where like take a shot if we mention Chuck Tingle at this
point.
We're
big fans.
We are big fans.
But let's talk about really quickly, for those who don't know, what is an advanced reader copy and why do people get them? Why are we getting this book before it's published?
Now, are you asking me? Okay. So anyway, so an advanced...
I'm asking you.
Okay, cool. All right. So an advanced reader copy is a way to generate reviews so that when you go live, that you have some content for people to base their opinions on. Because, right, you know, there's only so much, like, you could present a summary, but, like, how much do people trust that summary? Especially for somebody, in this case, like Chuck Tingle, it's erotica, normally, is his current base. And then this is not necessarily in that vein, so he doesn't have his normal audience.
There is no sex in this book.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, the normal audience isn't necessarily, like, it can't, like, we can super enjoy it, but, like, you're trying to bring in a new audience. So, like, so you're trying to bring in additional, like, readers that may not have encountered your work before and may not have any sort of easy reference to you as an author. And so, like, you're going to distribute to people that you think would be available or would be interested in your content, your book, to read it and to provide a review of it. And also people that are soliciting this from you, like, which is how we got it, actually. I think you wrote into the...
Well, Tor Nightfire sent out an email to their email list, and I responded with information about our podcast. They're like, you had to submit, you had to put in for it, and then they selected people. So it wasn't that I was like, please give us an ARC. I was like, oh, if you are handing out ARCs, our show would be a good fit for it.
Explicitly, yeah.
And then they approved and we got an ARC in the mail.
Yeah. So in this case, it's more of a way to generate just like honest, but still like mostly, you know, obviously the idea is mostly positive reviews because this is, again, a free copy of something that somebody worked really hard on.
Yeah, absolutely. Which all sounds very simple, doesn't it?
And yet somehow... Somehow.
So we talked a little bit before about making sure to pay creators for their work. And that's kind of the center of some of the controversies. There are controversies around ARCs because no one is getting paid for an ARC, which is frankly shocking. So the way that...
I didn't realize that, honestly. Like, I mean, I knew, I generally had content knowledge of ARCs, but mm-hmm. I didn't really grasp until this podcast that they weren't, nobody was getting paid for this. Like, again, these are physical copies. So this is just people. And again, consider, like, we did an episode recently where we talked about, like, the cost to everybody involved and how, like, the author doesn't really make their money until XYZ happens and they have the money that they're paid in advance and then they have to make all of that back and then they still might not get money back until XYZ happens.
Right.
This is all debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the marketing departments for these publishing companies will work with the like the physical printing words on paper publisher bits to print these books, and then they won't pay the author for the books that are printed. No one pays the bloggers or reviewers for reviewing them. Some bloggers are propped up by advertising. Some bloggers are propped up in other ways, but no, they don't get direct payments by receiving ARCs. And the marketers justify this as saying, oh, well, the ARC is the payment. But then a lot of people will also get upset at our reviewers trying to sell that, to turn that into liquid cash or to do anything else with it. So it turns into this whole big thing. I had a list in here of the controversy surrounding ARCs. And I'm just going to read it to you. Authors are never paid for ARC print runs, which I said. Reviewers are never paid for ARC reviews. And I have a parenthetical in here that we're not going to get into, but is accurate. It says, should we talk about how most reviewers are women? ? End parentheses. People not paying women for their labor obviously is an extremely long...
Invisible labor in general, like... across the board. Yeah. And that's just everywhere. And it will never, not in our lifetimes, be a topic that doesn't have relevance. But go on.
Absolutely. And since no one's getting paid, both the authors and the reviewers start to chafe when someone kind of brings them up outside of giving a positive review. So I just gave a positive review of the book. Obviously, I wouldn't have talked about it if I didn't like it. But a negative review is possible. And authors... getting a negative review are like, why would you ever do that? My work is perfect. How could you? This is a lot of independent authors. I'm not saying Chuck Tingle would ever do this, but some authors get really upset if someone posts a negative review. But then if you don't post any review, some authors also get upset. There was a viral tweet, or viral kind of among the publishing Twitter, saying that if you get an ARC and you don't review it, that's theft. And I was like, theft from who? Doesn't make sense, sir. Also, like, a lot of people get tons and tons and tons of ARCs and galleys. Like, it's, there's no time to read all of those books. That doesn't make any sense. But another thing is the reviewers sometimes feel inclined to sell those ARCs, which...
That, you know, I would say is then
Kaylee
a problem.
Just winced a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, the author's not getting paid for that book. So, you know, the creative behind... the book itself is not getting paid.
That's exploitative, in my
opinion. It's a little bit, yeah, it's very exploitative. But honestly, like, that one, I usually say that a lot of this can be laid at the feet of the marketers. I think I think that ARC print runs because you are essentially saying that you believe that this book is worthy of reviewing. So the marketer should also be paying the royalties.
I will say that, I mean, even if it's just maybe like because, again, you're trying to generate the buzz needed to get the book successful on like official launch.
Right.
As a, this is kind of, you could treat this as a soft launch. Like you should still maybe like, maybe not as much, I don't know, but there should still be some compensation, even if it's just like, again, an additional lump sum payment to the author that may not be as much as like the advance or whatever, or like a limited amount, like per, that isn't your normal amount that you would, they would get for these, for copies
or
of the book.
Or the contract should just cover.
Or the contract should cover it initially, like some form of compensation for sure.
I
for the current state of things,
yeah,
it is exploitative to sell your advanced reader copy. In my opinion.
Yeah. But there's also a trend of authors getting angry at reviewers doing pretty much anything with ARCs. I found a blog post from an author who found it offensive when a reviewer asked them to sign an ARC at a book signing. And I was like, just chill. Everybody, can we chill for a hot second? This is clearly such a hot button topic. And if you like don't believe me, just go search ARC on Twitter, ARC, not AOC. It's going to give you a whole different Twitter results list. But yeah, it's just everyone, you can find reviewers and authors complaining about the situation. And it's true. Why don't marketers pay authors for the ARCs that they are printing? Because it's really essentially the marketing department getting books for free and then handing them out. And then everyone else being like getting mad.
Having to eat the cost,
basically. Yeah. I know that you obviously see a lot of different things and you might have researched this separately. So what did you think?
So at the end of the day, like obviously people should be paid for their efforts, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that there's absolute value in this discussion, but again, like until the market or the, I guess the model changes, mm-hmm. you shouldn't try to sell your copy. Like for one. But I mean, like, I get that. I think the question would then become is how ethical is it for like if you have a monetized blog of some sort for your reviews where you're doing ads and you're making money for your ads, does any of that get a, you know, do you kick any of that back for those like links that are kicked when you clicked or whatever? And I think that is the discussion for right now that could be troublesome.
Yeah.
Right now.
We're gonna make sure to list the book Camp Damascus on our bookshop.org page, which if you buy it through there, the author will receive royalties and they will make a donation to independent bookstores. So I always recommend that you shop local if you
please
can.
Do, guys.
The book is not out yet. It comes out in July. And Kaylee will maybe have a review, her own review for us in our next episode. Let's go to the independent booksellers and talk about them making the shirts out of their native.
Oh my god, that was I absolutely insanely love that. Like fucking fantastic viral marketing technique. Go for it. Like
do
I would 100% buy that.
And the summary.
I want to buy that like right now. I read about that,
I immediately was like, if we ever get negative reviews, I'm gonna put any future merch lines. Anyway, go ahead.
All right. So a recent visitor to Capital Books left a bad review, and it was talking about the independent bookstores being woke. In Sacramento, California. Okay. Absolutely. Apologies. So in Sacramento, California. So this particular independent bookstore, Capital Books, they received a negative review because they were too, quote unquote, woke and were presenting basically, as we've had experiences with on the book banning conversation, material that was more inclusive in their bookstore and like that wasn't separated from like their kids section, basically.
Yeah, so, they were talking about like what gay people and non-binary people having lives.
Yeah, like that's amazing. What do you mean? Like these people exist in the world? They don't just spring fully formed at 30? What? You mean that their children struggling at 11 with their sexuality already knowing that there's something wrong? Like when I was a kid, I didn't have any like language for how I feel and who I was.
And that's a tragedy.
And it took
it
me
made you feel other.
Yeah, I did. No, and it took me so long to figure out. And I hurt my people that I love and care for because I didn't know like what I could provide to them and like how I could be in their lives. And so I you know, was trying to fit myself into a mold, but was uncomfortable and knew I wasn't being genuine with the people I cared for. And it was just, I made myself ill. And so, like, not having that context is hurtful. It's harmful. So this particular bookstore received this negative review about them trying to kind of fill this gap for kids and for young people and just for people in general. And yeah. It is 100%. Like, this is, again, a problem that I have. I'm very passionate about. And I have, like, all of these things saved up because there's only so much that I can, like, it's just really hard to respond with love sometimes. So this particular bookstore responded in such a fantastic manner because, again, these reviews are public. You're writing them for the store to use, like, in public space. So the bookstore in question, Capital Books, decided, having received this review, that it was speaking to them, like, on what they were trying to do. They're like, good, this is what we wanted to do. They created shirts specifically that had this review printed, and it went, like, viral. Neil Gaiman? We talked about how he pronounces his, and yeah. I always get it wrong because I'm the worst for some reason.
I'm sure he's used to it.
I am as a person, so I'm sure he is as well. But so Neil Gaiman responded, and he was like, I like this. This is a cool shirt. So, and they apparently sold out of the shirts. So, like, great. Good for them. Good for you, Capital Books.
Yeah.
Godspeed.
I'm going to read the review because it made me laugh.
It made me laugh, too. Please do.
First of all, it's a 2-star review. It's not a 1-star review. It's 2 stars, which means they found something redeeming in here.
The bean bags and the small chair.
Quote, children's section is littered with woke leftist ideologue literature. However, it was nice that the children's section had a small chair and bean bags. So they put that on a shirt.
Amazing. Perfect. 100%.
It made me laugh so much I had to send it. It's perfect.
Loved it.
Oh, man. I love people taking their, like, what might be a negative review and being like, no, it is time.
So the feedback is what we wanted to happen. Yeah. You just were wrong in rating. You should have been 4 stars. Like,
should have been 5. It should have been a million stars.
There should have been more woke leftist ideologue literature. Not enough beanbag chairs.
Not enough woke books.
That's why it was only 4 stars, not 5. We needed more small chairs.
This person liked the fact that there were small chairs, but not the fact that...
that was so funny. Anyway, I would genuinely, like, buy this shirt.
Yeah,
100%.
It sold out. Sorry, everybody. I'll have a link in the show notes so you'll be able to see the shirt itself. Maybe they'll put it back in stock, so we'll have that link there. But it's sold out for the moment. Moving on to more news. We talked a little bit about this in one of our recent episodes, how several contributors to the New York Times opinion section, so mostly people who are not directly employed by the New York Times, wrote a letter to the Times standards editor, which is the person who decides, like, the style for the overall newspaper. And they said, we would really prefer if you would stop referring to trans people as infectious, defective, problematic, wrong, all of these things that the Times have kind of been tacitly implying or just letting through from their journalists. So these people said, you need to stop. So from their point of view, this was a proposal to the standards editor to change the standards. From the Times management point of view, this turned into a staff complaint issue. And so they are addressing it as a staffing problem. And the New York Times has different policies for staffing problems versus standards conversations.
Such a disingenuous take on this article, this letter.
Yeah.
Like, it is an immensely incorrect and a real bad read.
Yeah. So there were, and I think that part of it is that there were actually, there was actually more than one letter that was sent around the same time. So the Times management, the New York Times management has been kind of
sidestepping. Yeah, they're sidestepping the actual real, genuine, official, like, you can't look away from it feedback. These are facts that you chose to print, and, like, responding to the stuff that they want to respond to, which is just so, God, Dang it.
Yeah. So there's a one of the most, the, probably the most disingenuous piece for me was them being like, there are proper channels for this. And it's like, yes, we know. It's writing a letter to the standards editor, which we is did. What we just did. It was so upsetting to me to see that. I was listening to a podcast with one of the union representatives that wrote the letter. And they were talking about how, like, that it's just been so misrepresented.
I was so mad that I quit my Time subscription. And then I had to start it again because all of our, like, a quarter of the articles month or this for this episode were for Times. And I was like, dang it.
I'm so sorry. It is the newspaper of record. But also one of our local libraries has a Time subscription. So
I do need to, I just need to do that. But like, I'll stop it eventually again. But like, I mean, to be fair, that's like my response. Like that's, but with your dollars. So like, I do need to stop it. But like, yes, I need to just, I'll pick it up through the library again.
It's upsetting to see. My hope is that with all of the attention on this, that because there are a lot of people who are, you know, like laying out what is actually happening here. My hope is that people who care about the news, including the New York Times management, will see that, take it, internalize it, and maybe make better decisions than what we've seen with this. But it was, yes, very disappointing. I feel silly being like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed, but I am, I mean, I'm not mad, I'm just really disappointed with how they've handled the whole situation.
I agree with you. I was also like, I just, everything about their response will link to the article, of course.
Yeah, of course.
That has all of the quotes and the responses.
Yeah, this article was from Vanity Fair. They're reporting on it, and I'll also link to that podcast that was from Citations Needed.
It's very obvious to me reading this that they're choosing what they're responding to. They're not responding to the like on record, like articles that they have published that were called out and the critiques specifically called out. Like, these are the facts, and they're not, and it's also very telling that they're not saying, well, no, this is bad, like, this isn't right, like, this isn't a good, like, this isn't a genuine critique. They're choosing not to respond to that because they are valid criticisms, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah, we're not psychic, so I can't say like that that's why, but they are good in point. Fact, choosing not
they
to respond
have
to
not
the valid
responded
criticisms.
to the point-by-point criticisms.
Yeah, instead they are objecting to the method that a different letter was delivered. Mm. Mm-hmm. Very upsetting. So that's what's going on.
I don't know why they've chosen to.
We had kind of framed this as a super good thing in a recent episode. We were like really excited that this might cause some change, and now we're just kind of disappointed. Moving on, this article from The New Yorker made quite a splash on my news feeds. I don't know about you, Kaylee. What is the future of the English department? Is the English major dead? Well, we're not, so hopefully not, like, soon.
Right, for sure. I mean, and that's just, like, it's
just someone who's actively getting a degree.
Right. It's such a sensational article, in my opinion.
It kind of is.
I mean, no. I mean, like, it's, people have been talking about, like, we've been talking about, what can you do with an English degree? And, like, I think that's just always been the case, and it's a pretty, like, it's not a bad foundational degree.
Uh-huh.
At all. Like, you can do a lot with it, but you have to have, like, some plugins, basically. Like, it's a really helpful degree. And as somebody that got a degree in English, as another person that got, like, we on this podcast.
Yeah, obviously we're very biased on this one again. Yeah.
Have English degrees. But, like, we also intentionally slanted our English degrees in certain veins. Like, you specifically went in for editing, and you not only did you educate yourself, you also went into a publishing company as an intern, and you worked your way up and got jobs that gave you the experience you needed. Like, I personally took, you know, I, like, in my liberal arts education, I took classes and got my, you know, they didn't have, like, technical writing, like, it was literature was my major, but I was able to slant that with, like, minors and other things that I did, and my internships, and the experience that I sought, and the jobs that I approached afterwards. So it's always been a question. It's just that right now, in general, I think the country is looking at college education across the board, and how necessary is it, and where do you get your trades from? Like, people, we still need those, you know, that support, and those jobs are, like, paying good money out of school. And, like, how do you kind of balance that? And not everybody has to have a college education. And I think that these conversations are like necessary, and they've been a long time coming, and they're picking up steam as we go. And it's been basically since education was commercialized, and people started actively, you know, advertising, because now it's a commercial institution and you're getting money off of it, XYZ. Like, thanks a god, thanks a lot, Reagan, appreciate that, really helping the country.
One of the things that they bring up in this is that enrollments are down in across the humanities, across the liberal arts, and enrollments in colleges, specifically undergrad, is up in the sciences and technology, engineering stuff. And they never really talk about in this article the conversations that are happening kind of more broadly about whether or not college is ever going to be necessary for those humanities and liberal arts jobs. Because ultimately, when you're 18 years old and you're told, you know, take this test to see if you want to go get a higher education, you are told that if you get a college degree, you will do much better in the job market. So they're told that they need this for a job. And when they get into the job market and find that their humanities degree, the words on the paper are much less significant than the actual skills that they developed, you get a little bit disillusioned. Right? Like, editing is a very technical skill, and I was, you know, very luckily able to capitalize on that. And you were essentially majoring in critical reading and technical writing, which is, you know, what you ultimately chose to do. But the words on the paper don't reflect that for you.
No, not at all.
I got, again, very lucky that the words on the paper reflected that for me, but it's the skills that you develop.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Is colleges are just kind of, it feels like they're pulling kids in with these promises. And they're not necessarily incorrect, but they're also not complete.
Right.
The information that they're providing is incomplete, and they're not setting kids up with the full picture on what they need to do in their college career, mm-hmm. which I'm calling it a college career because it's a full-time, like, education is a full-time experience. As somebody that you know, you're going to school right now and working.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. Like, I, you know, went to school full-time and worked, you know, like 32 hours minimum during the semester. It's rough doing both things. Mm-hmm. And you got kids that are doing that and then they can't make back, like, they're struggling under the debt potentially of the cost of the education. And they didn't know to pursue X, Y, or Z internship, or they didn't have the capacity to do it, or they didn't know to find these things that they could get certifications in.
Or they couldn't afford an unpaid internship.
Or they couldn't afford it. Yeah. Like, it's just, it is disheartening for them. And that is 100% valid feedback. And that is how, that is the system that they have to change.
I think that is much more directly leading to
this disillusionment.
I think the disillusionment is much more leading to this drop in enrollments mm-hmm. for the humanities. In this article, they kind of say that it's because people are, they almost imply that it's because people are greedy. Like, they want to have, like, a high-paying job when they get out of college. And like, then
go fucking figure.
I think it was one of the professors that they interviewed kind of implied that it's because they're too woke. And it was like, you guys are, what are you talking about? Obviously, this isn't actually, and I'm kind of reading between the lines on a couple of the things here. But I was just like, I think it's also that, you know, humanities skills you can get in other settings. Meanwhile, STEM skills, it's actually much easier to get in a concentrated setting like undergrad or like a college. I was talking to a friend of mine who had gone through a creative writing master's degree, an MFA program, Master's in Fine Arts. And he talked about how, unfortunately, what he got the most out of that program was the contacts, like the people that he went with or that were instructors in the program. And based on the amount of debt that he had to take on to go through that, I asked him if he thought it was worth it. And he kind of wasn't sure. Meanwhile, you know, like, that's one of the reasons that I'm going to a more technical master's degree talking about publishing and production, which I think is important, and is, you know, something that you have to learn either on the job or through a technical course. So I absolutely can see where they're all coming from, but I think that the New Yorker here is a little bit off base on why this is happening.
Yeah, I do 100%. That's why I said I think that the article is a little sensational and maybe didn't. I don't know what the intention behind the slant that the article that the article took was. I don't know what the author maybe intended fully, but it does feel like that they're ignoring other factual, like, objective research.
Yeah. And it spawned like a million responses. So if you want to impress your friends about the discourse in publishing right now, talk about whether or not the English major is dead. I don't think it is. I think
no, it's
critical again, reading is always going to be important.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's going to be fine. Moving on to our favorite news section, women and minorities killing it in publishing.
Heck yeah.
The inaugural class of the Women's Prize for Nonfiction. The Women's Prize for Fiction was set up in 1996 after no female writers were shortlisted for the Booker Prize in 1991. For almost 30 years, the prize has been consistently excellent. When it comes to nonfiction prizes, only 35% of winners in the past 10 years have been women, according to research commissioned for the Women's Prize, looking at 7 major UK nonfiction prizes. So basically, there is a new literary prize in the UK specifically focused on nonfiction written by women. That's awesome. Normally, we don't talk about prizes because they are kind of just a glorified version of marketing. But I thought that this one was good enough that we should talk about it because it is the first one. And also, they bring up some really, really good points in this Guardian article.
And it's stuff that we've talked about before, like absolutely, the default perspective and how that is always, for some reason, male.
Yeah. One of the quotes that this article starts out with is a woman describing, you know, if you close your eyes and think of a historian, you see an old man.
Which is fascinating because we see Evie Callahan. But that right. is, we are very she specific. She's a
librarian.
A very specific audience it's for true. That particular question.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes. So congratulations to the inaugural class of women who were nominated for the nonfiction shortlist. Congratulations to everyone involved with getting the prize off the ground. I know how difficult it is to organize these things. So this is awesome. Congratulations.
Absolutely. We super support you and you're doing great.
A publishing house called Stirred Stories that got a write-up in the Washington Post. They're talking about publishing diverse books, mostly for children, specifically children of color, and being able to see themselves represented is absolutely important for them in their development. So congratulations to you all getting your write-up in the Washington Post. I'm hoping that that's going to be
yeah, I hope a big you get boost some, for them. Exactly, yeah. Spotlight, well-deserved, for yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Moving on, this is kind of just a spotlight. It's not really anyone, you know, doing super groundbreaking work in publishing, but this is a relatively new column from LitHub called Life Advice for Book Lovers, where book lovers write in, and it's just an advice column, and it's accompanied by book recommendations for whatever you're going through. And it's written by an author whose alias is Dorothea. And I have absolutely loved it. Whenever I see it pop up in my LitHub newsletter, I always click on it because it's fantastic. And there's someone talking in here about grief and talking about getting in and out of book ruts and things like that. So 10 out of 10 recommend. Did you take a look at this column?
I looked through the column. Yeah. Like I love all of the, just the diversity of the topics and responses that they're yeah. pulling in. Like, I think that's super cool.
Dorothea has been super thoughtful in their responses recently. So I was, really helpful. So, or I found it very helpful and, you know, heartening to see that this is something that, you know, other people do. It's like, sometimes I just want to read a book that's reflecting how I'm feeling, and then I'm working through it through literature.
Yeah, I super agree. And it's also just, it's, again, if you're looking for something, like, you're not sure what you want to read, but you want to read something, which I hate that, like, feeling. It's yeah. a great place to go.
Yeah. So congratulations to all of the women and minorities killing it in publishing. And we hope to be covering more and more stories as we move on. And now for our favorite news section, or non-news section. Kaylee, what are you reading?
So I kind of mentioned to you before that I saw a couple movies, and obviously, so just in general, like, I just signed on a house. It's been very hectic, and work has also been quite hectic. Mm-hmm. So I will say that my reading material is maybe lighter than normal, which is just that it's A Guide to Troubled Birds.
A Guide to Troubled Birds?
Have you never heard of this before? Yeah. It's an internet meme.
No, what is this? Oh,
it's fantastic. So it's
are they troubled, like, angsty?
Sometimes.
Oh, no.
It's like a coffee book a coffee table book. Okay. Like, so it's a mixture of like art with captions and like short blurbs of text. Hold on, I'll find something to show you.
I love this idea.
It's fantastic. It blew up on the internet for a reason.
Okay.
Let's see if I can find a really good one.
Oh, I've seen these memes. Yeah. Oh, so it's a book of the
so it's those collected? It's the original things. Oh. And then it's also like this is the book. This is the book all these were like.
I like this.
This is it, yeah. So I just decided to just go and dig into that.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I bought the original. Like, I bought the book, and I'm sorry, I'm being noisy. So I bought the book, and I'm just going through and enjoying the blurbs and the photos and the paintings. And
Yeah. That's fantastic. So. You just rest your head on some fun stuff.
Yeah. What about you, Annie? What are you reading?
I have been reading a book called All We Can Save, which the subtitle is Truth, Courage, and Solutions for the Climate Crisis, edited by Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson and Catherine K. Wilkinson. And it is depressing. I actually didn't want to finish this book because the first half is so depressing. It's a collection of essays and poems. I'll just read the back blurb for you. Provocative and illuminating writings from women at the forefront of the climate movement who are harnessing truth, courage, and solutions to lead humanity forward. So essays, poems, and a couple illustrations talking about climate change, where we're at right now, where we need to go. And as you can imagine, it sucks. and I've been struggling with this for a while. We've talked about this before, that I have trouble finding any kind of silver lining or reasons for hope in the climate crisis. There's just so many systems in place that make it difficult for anyone to make progress. I was just complaining the other day about how few things are recyclable. You know, pizza boxes, not recyclable. According to what I've read, recycling facilities, if you have organic matter on anything that is being recycled, then that will contaminate the actual recycled material. But it's fine. I know that a lot of people will cut up their pizza boxes and just like keep the greasy parts off and put the like non-greasy parts into the recycling. Totally fine. Blah, blah, blah. Whatever. The point is that a lot of things that you think are recyclable are not. A lot of the like those little plastic clamshell boxes that you put your salad in, not recyclable. And it's tough to find hope in the world. But so reading this for the first half of the book, I was just like getting more and more depressed. And then, you know, in the second half of the book, they kind of move over to reasons to hope and ways to do more. So I'm going to read you this passage, which is about halfway through the book. This is from Emily N. Johnston, and the essay is called Loving a Vanishing World. It feels important to say here that it's not reasonable to expect to feel hopeful, at least not very often. But our gift and our task is far more powerful than sunny feelings, because we still have the chance to make space for hope, to act in such a way that hope might exist for others who come after us. Which made me feel really good.
Good. I'm glad you struggled to get that far,
because
you felt like so downheartened.
I'm going to read one more passage for you. This one is from Leah Cardamore Stokes, and the essay is called A Field Guide for Transformation. This is the final words of this essay. When I come to the end of my life, I want the scales to show that I prevented more carbon emissions than I caused, and there is no way to make that happen if I work only on myself. My offset plan is activism. And that made me feel also a lot better, that like, I sometimes feel guilty for being a little bit of an evangelist about these things, and I think maybe I don't need to sometimes.
You know what's really interesting? Something that you can look into that might make you feel better, too. I'll just make sure that I am remembering this correctly, and it just makes me happy that the string of words I'm about to tell you. So, Dollywood in Tennessee. So Dolly Parton's like theme park that she put together, like her resort area. You don't see any recycling bins directly because everything is put through a big sorter that pulls out organic material.
Wow.
So like we have a blueprint that we can refer to.
Yeah.
And like we have a major location, a big, like, amazing. A theme park that is doing a thing that, like, again, it makes it so much easier when you don't have to rely on people and, like, anyway, so...
To sort their own shit,
I'll send you that article, that information as well, basically. But it's just something that I learned about even, like a decade ago. Like, it was basically built into, like, it's been established like this for a long time. I guess I don't know if when it was initially built, it was done this way. But, like, they have an incredibly efficient recycling
system.
But yeah, so, like, things have changed a little bit, and, like, I think that at the end of the day, it's very possible, like, explicitly on the pizza box thing, that because of the perception, and the fact that there are genuinely, like, an occasional, like, pizza box that would be too greasy, mm-hmm. like, there may just be policies in place where waste management companies are refusing to take them, but, like, an independent study was conducted, and for the most part, the amount of grease in pizza boxes are not actually...
Though I suppose there is a difference between what is possible and what the municipal, like, people are willing to take.
So either willing to take or able to support for their facilities or whatever.
That's,
like,
maybe that's... Because then they have to sort through and be like, is this box too greasy? So that's also possible, too. It's all... See, and this is, like, part of it is, like, you have to do research for basic stuff like that, and ultimately there's a lot of ways to feel like there is just no hope for anyone, but there is, you know, and maybe there isn't hope for us specifically to stop global warming, but we can make enough progress that maybe the next generation can, or maybe
we can slow down, we can start slowing down the momentum and start, and then, like, give our future our kids and their kids a chance to turn it around.
Another thing I loved about this book is that the last chapter is all just, like, organized solutions based on, like, where you're concerned. Like, if you're concerned about building materials, here are solutions for building materials. If you're concerned about food waste, here are solutions for food waste. And I really appreciated that. So, yeah. So this book, I got it as a gift, and I was not happy with it. First, it was making me really sad, and it made me happy by the end. So
that's good.
I'm
on a good note, at least, not on a bad note.
Yes, it's gotta go somewhere. You gotta end with hope, otherwise we're all just gonna be freaking depressed. Anyway, so do you have a Kaylee Coda for us for this episode?
I do. I do think that if we do have any younger listeners or people that are, like, you know, moving into education for the first time or something and may not have a full awareness, or, like, you have people your whole life that have been telling you you need college for a career and you don't necessarily have people, like, that may have been through college before to help give you any sort of context or set any expectations outside of what you're being told in school, it might be helpful to approach this like kind of any other time investment, which is, what are you trying to get out of it? And a job in general is not really going to help you. Like, you need to figure out explicitly what you're aiming for and what you need to support that. And some of the ways that you can do that, because I've been explicitly reviewing these and trying to work through them with my family. Like, what kind of job do you think you might like? What uses your degree that you're hoping to get, like, that you, or what is in your field of study? And then talk to people in that area to make sure, one, that you do like that job, and two, like, that you understand how to, like, how to get the most out of your education, because it's not just you're getting a grade, you're developing skills. And so that's just really important. And colleges should do better at helping you understand that. But it is, at this point, a commercial entity. And so while I don't want to say that they're always being disingenuous when they work with you, it is a bit of a system. And sometimes people can fall through the cracks. And so you do have to be your own advocate across the board. If you are interested and you have questions, I am happy to answer any that you send to Annie, or do my best to discuss things with you. I don't claim to have, you know, all of the answers, but I am happy to be a sounding board and to discuss things, you know, with you if you don't have other people that you can go to.
And we are planning to do another What Can You Do with a BA in English episode, so stay tuned for more about this. Thank you for listening to The Ink Sink. You can find us wherever podcasts are listed. You can follow us on pretty much any social media platform. And you can support us through the Spotify for Podcasters platform, formerly known as Anchor. You can support us through Substack, or you can support us through our tip jar. And you can find all of those links on our Linktree, which is wherever you found this podcast. Thanks for listening.
Enjoy your life.